morning, friends. I hope wherever this finds you that you're doing well and that your loved ones are doing well. I'm reporting from a currently gray and drizzly southern tip of Vancouver Island, Canada. And it's a nice quiet Saturday morning. You might hear our Boston Terrier Kingston gently snoring in the background. So the dogs are quiet and resting, and no chainsaws today. Maybe thanks to the rain. So I thought it'd be a good time to do a little reading. And today, I wanted to read from a book that I'm currently rereading and just really enjoying. It's a book called Inner Work by the Jungian analyst, the late Jungian analyst Robert A. Johnson. And what can I say about Robert Johnson? Boy, he's one of the few classical Jungians that I think for me clearly understands from an experiential level what Jung was writing about. He doesn't get so caught up in the theories and concepts. He's really grounded in, I think, a direct experience and a deep spiritual life, which unfortunately I think is quite rare, at least for the Jungians who are doing a lot of writing. You know, these Jungian books can just be so full of words, and I often get the sense that they're not coming from a direct experience of what the author is writing about. But with Robert Johnson, it really comes through for me that he's writing from his own experience. And I think as a consequence of that, his books tend to be short. I mean, he doesn't waste any words. He doesn't kind of show off with how much he knows. Everything is really direct and to the point and grounded in practical wisdom. So this book is great. It's the subtitle is Using Dreams and Active Imagination for Personal Growth. And the first part of it just gives an amazing introduction to Jungian concepts. And then he goes on to show you how to apply them for yourself outside of, you know, a formal Jungian analysis, which is another impulse that I really love. And something I'm trying to do is to bring Jung's ideas and, you know, archetypal psychology into the community and to democratize this work, because I think it's one of the few paths of psycho-spiritual development that we have left in the modern West. So I think this is a really great book, and if I ever do a training in the inner journeying process that I've been developing, which is really a synthesis of Jungian dream work and active imagination with shamanic techniques like drumming, breathing, chanting, all of these techniques that help us get into an imaginal state, which then facilitates the active imagination that Jung developed, which was really nothing new. It was just a form of kind of imaginal shamanic journeying. Only he didn't draw on a lot of these techniques that really help facilitate that process. So inner journeying is something that has just been kind of organically developing for me through my own exploration and practice of, you know, archetypal and plant medicine shamanism and exploring Jung and the depth psychologist that came after him. So I really love this book. And if I ever do a training, this book, Inner Work by Robert A. Johnson, is going to be required reading because it just lays the groundwork for everything that we do. So for today's reading, I'm going to get into this section called Alternative Realities, the World of Dreaming, the Realm of Imagination. Let's begin. Our verbal patterns betray many of our automatic assumptions. If one discusses a dream with a friend, the friend is likely to ask something like, "Did that detail really happen, or only in the dream?" The implication is that what happens in a dream is not real. In fact, it would be more accurate to ask, "Did it happen in dream reality, or in physical reality, in the world of dreaming, or in the ordinary world?" Both are genuine worlds. Both are realities that truly exist. But the world of dreaming, if we only realized it, has more practical and concrete effect on our lives than outer events do. For it is in the world of dreaming that the unconscious is working out its powerful dynamics. It is there that the great forces do battle or combine to produce the attitudes, ideals, beliefs, and compulsions that motivate most of our behavior. Once we become sensitive to dreams, we discover that every dynamic in a dream is manifesting itself in some way in our practical lives, in our actions, relationships, decisions, automatic routines, urges, and feelings. We believe ourselves to be in conscious control of these elements of life, but this belief is the great illusion of ego control. These aspects of our lives are actually determined from a far deeper place. It is in the world of dreaming that their root sources are revealed in a form that we can see and understand. Dreams express the unconscious. Dreams are dynamic mosaics composed of symbols that express the movements, conflicts, interactions, and developments of the great energy systems within the unconscious. The unconscious has a particular capacity to create images and to use those images as symbols. It is these symbols that form our dreams, creating a language by which the unconscious communicates its contents to the conscious mind. Just as a burning fire inherently exudes heat, the unconscious inherently generates symbols. It is simply the nature of the unconscious to do so. As we learn to read those symbols, we gain the ability to perceive the workings of the unconscious within us. This ability to produce symbols affects more than just our dreams. All of human life is nourished by the flow of symbolic imagery from the wellsprings in the unconscious. Here's a quote from Eric Neumann. "The symbolic imagery of the unconscious is the creative source of the human spirit in all its realizations. Not only have consciousness and the concepts of its philosophical understanding of the world arisen from the symbol, but also religion, rite and cult, art and customs. And because the symbol-forming process of the unconscious is the source of the human spirit, language, whose history is almost identical with the genesis and development of human consciousness, always starts out as a symbolic language." Thus, Jung writes, "An archetypal content expresses itself, first and foremost, in metaphors." And that's from Neumann's book, Great Mother. Back to Robert. "The image symbols of the unconscious find their way to the level of consciousness mainly by two routes, dreams and imagination. It is easier to grasp the symbolic quality with dreams, for dreams often present mythical creatures and unearthly situations that would be impossible in everyday physical life. People are usually confused by the dream images until they learn that the images are symbolic and are not to be taken literally. Since dream images make no sense in ordinary terms, people dismiss them as weird or meaningless, but actually, dreams are completely coherent. If we take the time to learn their language, we discover that every dream is a masterpiece of symbolic communication. The unconscious speaks in symbols, not to confuse us, but simply because that is its native idiom." Now, he inserts a quote from Jung. "I was never able to agree that the dream is a facade behind which its meaning lies hidden, a meaning already known, but maliciously, so to speak, withheld from consciousness. To me, dreams are a part of nature, which harbors no intention to deceive, but expresses something as best it can, just as a plant grows or an animal seeks its food as best it can. These forms of life, too, have no wish to deceive our eyes, but we may deceive ourselves because our eyes are short-sighted. Long before I met Freud, I regarded the unconscious and dreams, which are its direct exponents, as natural processes to which no arbitrariness can be attributed, and above all, no legitimation." So that's Jung from Memories, Dreams, Reflections, the four-step approach to active imagination. Back to Robert. "We may compare a dream to a screen on which the unconscious projects its inner drama. We see there the various inner personalities that make up much of our total character, the dynamics among the forces that make up the unconscious. These invisible forces and their activities set off charges, so to speak, that are transmitted onto the screen. They take the form of images, and the interplay of the dream images gives us an exact representation of those inner dynamics that go on inside us. In learning how to understand these images, our conceptual starting point is our realization that they are not to be taken literally. We learn to look for an attitude, an inner personality, an inner development or conflict that clothes itself in the form and color of this image so that it may be visible to us in the land of dreaming." That's so good. Land of dreaming there is capitalized. I love that. Next section is called Imagination and Symbols. "We have said that dreams are the first of the two great channels of communication from the unconscious. The second is the imagination. It baffles many people at first to hear that the imagination is an organ of coherent communication, that it employs a highly refined, complex language of symbols to express the contents of the unconscious. Yet, it is true. If we learn to watch it with a practiced eye, we discover that the imagination is a veritable stream of energy and meaningful imagery flowing from the unconscious most of the time. We may picture two conduits that run from the unconscious to the conscious mind. The first conduit is the faculty of dreaming. The second is the faculty of imagination. Dreaming and imagination have one special quality in common: their power to convert the invisible forms of the unconscious into images that are perceptible to the conscious mind. This is why we sometimes feel as though dreaming is the imagination at work during sleep, and the imagination is the dream world flowing through us while we're awake. Just as the unconscious gives off charges of energy in the night that create patterns on the screen of the dream mind, the unconscious also functions during the waking hours. It emits a continual stream of energetic pulses that find their way to the conscious mind in the form of feelings, moods, and most of all, the images that appear in the imagination. Just as with dreams, the symbolic meanings of the images may be understood by the person who is willing to learn. The material that flows through the imagination takes many forms, from the frivolous to the visionary. At the bottom of the scale is the passive fantasy. This is the fanciful daydream that flits across the mind at odd times during the day, or sometimes distracts us for long periods of time. Such fantasies are mere entertainments or distractions that add nothing to consciousness. At the top of the scale is the visionary experience, in which active imagination and religious encounter merge. Active imagination is one way of using the imagination constructively to approach the unconscious. There are many other ways, including profound forms of meditation. Our culture in the 20th century has a tremendous collective prejudice against the imagination. It is reflected in the same It is reflected in the things people say. You are only imagining things, or that is only your fantasy, not reality. In fact, no one makes up anything in the imagination. The material that appears in the imagination has to originate in the unconscious. Imagination, properly understood, is a channel through which this material flows to the conscious mind. To be even more accurate, imagination is a transformer that converts the invisible material into images the conscious mind can perceive. The root of the word imagination is the Latin word imago, meaning image. The imagination is the image-forming faculty in the mind, the organ that has the power to clothe the beings of the inner world in imagery so that we can see them. The imagination generates the symbols the unconscious uses to express itself. A long series of historical and psychological developments over the centuries have produced our current misunderstandings of what fantasy and imagination really are. We haven't the space here to recall all of those developments, but since the prejudice is so pervasive, it is worthwhile to look briefly at how fantasy and imagination were understood by our intellectual ancestors, the ancient Greeks. Our English word fantasy derives from the Greek word phantasia. The original meaning of this word is instructive. It meant a making visible. It derived from a verb that means to make visible, to reveal. The correlation is clear. The psychological function of our capacity for fantasy is to make visible the otherwise invisible dynamics of the unconscious psyche. We find here in the psychology of the Greeks a fundamental insight that modern depth psychology has had to rediscover. The human mind is invested with a special power to convert the invisible realm into visible forms so that it can be seen in the mind and contemplated. We call this invisible realm the unconscious. For Plato, it was the world of ideal forms. Other ancients thought of it as the sphere of the gods, the region of pure spirit. But all sensed one thing: only our power to make images enables us to see it. For the Greeks, phantasia denoted this special faculty in the mind for producing poetic, abstract, and religious imagery. Phantasia is our capacity to make visible the contents of the inner world by giving them form, by personifying them. The Greeks took for granted the reality of the inner world, expressed as ideal forms or universal qualities that clothed themselves in the divine images of their gods. For them, phantasia was the organ by which that divine world spoke to the human mind. In European psychology, until at least medieval times, the image-forming capacity called imagination or phantasia was thought of as the organ that receives meanings from the spiritual and aesthetic worlds and forms them into an inner image that can be held in memory and made the object of thought and reasoning. In religion, the imaginative faculty was the legitimate path of religious inspiration, revelation, and experience. The fact that information entered the conscious mind through the imagination did not in any way discredit it, for, quote, an experience of poetic imagination was conventionally regarded as accompanied by a belief in the reality of what is imagined. That's from the Oxford English Dictionary. It was perhaps in Elizabethan times that the other parallel meaning of fantasy began to take hold. A fictitious daydream, something fanciful and unreal. The word fancy was coined, derived from fantasy, to mean something that is made up whimsically in the imagination as a mere entertainment. Unfortunately, this is the misunderstanding of the nature of imagination that we have inherited in the popular mind of our century. If we think about it even briefly, it should be clear how foolish it is to denigrate the imagination. Humans depend on the imagination's image-making power and its image symbols for poetic imagery, literature, painting, sculpture, and essentially all artistic, philosophical, and religious functioning. We could not develop the abstract intelligence, science, mathematics, logical reasoning, or even language were it not for our capacity to generate these image symbols. This is why Neumann could say what was quoted earlier. The symbolic imagery of the unconscious is the creative source of the human spirit in all its realizations. And because the symbol-forming process of the unconscious is the source of the human spirit, language, whose history is almost identical with the genesis and development of human consciousness, always starts out as a symbolic language. And again, that's Erich Neumann from Great Mother. Okay, last part of this section is called Active Imagination, the Conscious Use of the Imaginative Faculty. Active imagination, like the unconscious, has always existed in human life. But as with many facets of our inner life, it took Jung to discover the lost art and make it available to modern people. At first glance, active imagination may seem too simple or naive to be taken seriously as a psychological technique. It consists in going to the images that rise up in one's imagination and making a dialogue with them. It involves an encounter with the images. The conscious ego mind actually enters into the imagination and takes part in it. This often means a spoken conversation with the figures who present themselves, but it also involves entering into the action, the adventure or conflict that is spinning its story out in one's imagination. It is this awareness, this conscious participation in the imaginal event, that transform it from a mere passive fantasy to active imagination. The coming together of conscious mind and unconscious mind on the common ground of the imaginal plane gives us an opportunity to break down some of the barriers that separate the ego from the unconscious, to set up a genuine flow of communication between the two levels of the psyche, to resolve some of our neurotic conflicts with the unconscious, and thus to learn more about who we are as individuals. Because of the popular notion that imagination is fictitious, many people react automatically by thinking that such an experience in the imagination would be meaningless. They think, I would just be talking to myself. But if we work with active imagination, we soon confirm that we dialogue with genuine interior parts of our own selves. We confront the powerful personalities who live inside us at the unconscious level and who are so often in conflict with our conscious ideas and behavior. We actually enter into the dynamics of the unconscious. We travel into a region where the conscious mind had not known how to go. This experience, to be sure, is symbolic. The images with whom we interact are symbols, and we encounter them on a symbolic plane of existence. But a magical principle is at work. When we experience the images, we also directly experience the inner parts of ourselves that are clothed in the images. This is the power of symbolic experience in the human psyche when it is entered into consciously. Its intensity and its effect on us is often as concrete as a physical experience would be. Its power to realign our attitudes, teach us, and change us at deep levels is much greater than that of external events that we may pass through without even noticing. When we experience the symbol, we simultaneously experience the complex, the archetype, the inner psychic entity that is represented by the symbol. When the image speaks, it is with one of our own inner voices. When we answer back, it is the unseen inner part of our own self that listens and registers. It stands before us in the form of the imaginal image. In active imagination, I am not so much talking to myself as talking to one of myself. It is in that exchange between the ego and the various characters who rise up from the unconscious and appear in my imagination that I begin to bind the fragmented pieces of myself into a unity. I begin to know and learn from the parts of myself I had never known before. When people ask me if active imagination is real or if dreams are real, I always think of a detail in the story of Don Quixote de la Mancha. Don Quixote said he was seeking the bread that is made from better than wheat. He meant, of course, the host, the bread that is eaten as part of the Christian ritual. The host is made from wheat, yet it is also fashioned from the archetype, from the body of Christ, from spirit, from better than wheat. In the same figurative sense, I can say that active imagination is realer than real. It is not only real in the sense that it has a practical and concrete bearing on our physical lives, it also connects us to a world of forces that are superpersonal and transcendent. It allows us to participate in shaping the flow of the principal streams of energy that join together in each of us to form the long-range patterns of our lives, our relationships, and our attitudes. It affects us on the level of realities that go deeper and affect us more profoundly than any local event in our daily lives. By comparison with these huge inner forces and the long-range contours and directions that they establish in us, the worries and decisions of daily life turn out to be mostly ripples on the surface of a huge river of life that moves slowly and inexorably toward its goal. Dreamwork and active imagination attune us to the larger vision of life, to the direction of that huge river. They pull our minds briefly off the ripples and local cross currents that preoccupy us most of the time. We therefore come to sense that dream and imagination connect us to a level of existence that is not only real in the external sense of reality, it is more than real. Well, isn't that just great? I mean, if he doesn't get you excited about working with your imagination, I don't know what will. And really, I mean, in that whole section, if you were to replace active imagination with inner journeying, this really makes the case for this particular approach and practice that I've been developing, and I think its importance. So I think I'll continue reading through this book, or at least the first section of it. The next section is on archetypes and the unconscious, which is also super relevant to the work that I do, and I know super relevant to a lot of what my clients and friends are interested in these days, really trying to understand the archetypes that are at work in their unconscious and making them conscious. So, and of course, Robert writes about it really, really well with lots of clarity and down-to-earth practical wisdom. So until next time, my friends, take care.